IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello, and welcome back to IRS on the Road. We're always so glad when you join us. We found some wonderful friends yesterday at the museum who said they had been listening in. And it's always nice to know there's somebody at the other end, right?
Well, it's a little scary when someone walks up and starts telling you all the things they know about you, because we sort of let it all hang out on this podcast. Right. And people who listen every week tend to know things that we forgot we had said.
Well, and this one even knew things from our past that we had forgotten. It was one of our wonderful missionaries from when we were mission leaders in London over 40 years ago.
All
wow, it was such a surprise to see him as a grandfather.
And speaking of numbers, Linda, I'm going to announce something to Linda that she doesn't know. This is going to be a surprise to her, but I've decided to surrender to my real age. I've been
now.
When
I mean,
people
it's been
say you have a big birthday coming up, I say, yeah, I'm turning 60, or sometimes I'd say 70. But I've just decided that it's actually great to be turning 80. It's octogenarian is a remarkable term. And come on, I mean, I love octagons. It's my favorite shape. We have an octagonal house that we build at Bear Lake. We love to go to lighthouses because they're octagonal. Octagonal is the 8 points of a compass. I mean, it's just 8 is just the best number. And so what if you have to put an O on it, you know? And by the way, Linda, you don't know this either. I had lunch with a young guy that I'm kind of mentoring a little bit. And he, you know what he told me? He what? Said, I want to live to be 120. And I think with all of the bio sort of devices and improvements in healthcare, I think I can live to be 120. And I'm like, really?
what is it?
You mean I'm only two-thirds of the way through my life?
Like, yeah.
But I do think the reason I've decided to just surrender to it all?
Why?
We need to celebrate age more. We need to understand in America, in this great country of ours, that age is a badge of honor and oftentimes a mark of wisdom. And we need to quit sort of striving for youth when it isn't there anymore. You know, we need to embrace age like they do in some other countries where we've traveled and spoke. I mean, most of Asia, age is venerated, and you know, it's the grandpa and the grandma that are really the ones who lead the families and so on. And I don't want to say it too bluntly, but we do have a kind of a tendency in this country to, you know, put people sort of out to pasture in a way in our own minds. There's a lot of judgment going on. Oh, what could he know? He's old. Or what could she do? She's past her prime and so on. I think we need to embrace age, and that can start with those of us who are getting along a little bit. We can quit trying to resist it. We can, even though we did hear the poem quoted in a movie the other night, rage, rage against the dying sun, you know, fight against age, right. But I'm not sure that's what the poet meant. I think did I make my case?
I think you made your case. Does that mean you're going to quit playing tennis?
Oh, no, 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 no. What it means is you keep playing tennis. That's the whole point.
Of course.
You embrace the age and you understand that, yes, you will inevitably lose some of your physical capacity, but you will compensate for that. With tennis is a great example. I can't hit a serve as hard as I used to, but I'm way more wily than I used to be. I have a lot more spin on the ball. I have a lot more trick shots. And that's a metaphor for life, right? There's some things that the capacity slows down. Arthur Brooks says we lose some of our fluid intelligence, but we gain more and more of what he calls crystallized intelligence, which combines wisdom and so on.
Now, it sounds kind of scary, like hardening, crystallizing.
No, yeah, he might have
hardening of the arteries. Anyway, yeah, that is true. We really do. We love things about growing older, I think. And it is just, although there's some aches and pains on the way through, but I'm thinking about another 40 years for you.
No, I was just the young guy.
I know, but just thinking.
I'm thinking of it as the fifth set, you know, which means I'm 4/5 of the way through. But I just think there's a lot of good left. And you know, it's different. And as we embrace it, and I think society should, we live in, there's so much talk about diversity. We want racial diversity. We want gender diversity. We want geographic diversity. You know, I just edited a book on no divisions among you. We need unity among diversity, so to speak. But what about age diversity? Why don't more corporations have a 2 or 3 octogenarians on their boards simply because of their perspective?
Well,
the things that they know that younger people can only read about.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's a dilemma, but we have had some thoughts about this week because of health issues. We've taken a few minutes to really take care of our health and found a few bumps, but nothing serious. So we are just grateful that we can keep going. And I think the listeners are well aware that because we were last week, you know, Jackson Hole for your birthday, I think you did mention it.
Well, I'm looking at this humongous silver helium balloon. One is an 8 and one is a 0. So
it's hard to forget.
It's pretty hard to forget right at the moment. But, you know, that leads into something else we've been thinking a lot about this week, honey, which is traditions. The traditions. We're on our way tomorrow to meet with all of our kids who live in Utah and all of their kids, all of our grandkids who are reasonably close. And what are we going to do?
We're going to jump in the leaves. This was our tradition from the get-go, from the day we got married. We have to jump in the leaves, and it's just a perfect time to jump in the leaves. It is so gorgeous out here in Utah. It's just heavenly everywhere you look. It's gorgeous, and there's a lot of leaves on the ground. So we have all the grandkids meeting us there. We're going to pile up huge piles of leaves and bury grandfather.
Yeah, I'm the one that gets buried, and I'll tell you, it is... It's a perfect example of the power of traditions, right? It came about almost haphazardly. I still remember we were trying to have a tradition on everyone's birthday when the kids were very young. And you know, all of our kids weren't even here. But the older ones said, well, Dad, your birthday's right at the end of October. We love raking up those leaves. We love the sound of it. We love the look of it. We love the autumn sun slanting in. I mean, I'm just trying to remember all. We just should always jump in leaves on your birthday. And we were like, great, okay, let's do that. That'll be my birthday tradition. Thinking that as they got older, they would sort of, you know, not want to do something so silly and childish.
Yeah, but we've done better on some of our traditions than others. We have one daughter who we decided she'd float her cake at whatever body of water we could find on her birthday.
Because of a book
it was
that
in
she
July.
Loved,
yeah.
A Tasha Tudor book.
And so we have floated her cake every year since she was a little tot. And now when she left to be a missionary or left to go to school, all the other kids would call and say, I floated a cupcake in the sink for you today, or, you know, something to remember.
When we're together, we've floated cakes in moats in England. We've floated it often at Bear Lake. So, and it's almost like the stranger the tradition is, the more it lasts. But going back to mine, just as an example, you know, not only did the kids not, this is the thing we learn about children and about traditions, that they love traditions. They don't even understand why they love them so much. But we think they love them so much because it's stability. It's something predictable. It's something unique. It's something we do in our family. And it binds people together, traditions do. And
we're really coming up on the tradition season, you know.
Yeah.
We're coming up with this. We're
traditions for Thanksgiving and
almost
for Christmas.
November and Christmas. There's so many beautiful traditions. Again, we wish we could talk to you about it and you could share yours. But Traditions are really sometimes the glue that holds your family together.
Ooh, I like that. The glue that holds your family together. And I know Linda knows where I'm going. I know we've told this on Ayers on the Road before, but it just illustrates what we're saying so well, that as our kids got older, they just wanted my tradition to get bigger. We've got to go to the park. We've got to have bigger leaves, bigger trees. We've got to jump out of the trees into the leaves. We've got to invite our friends. We've got to bring hot chocolate. I mean, traditions, they don't die. They mushroom. They grow. They get bigger. And then the one I always tell that always chokes me up, the first year that any of my kids were gone for my birthday, two were on missions, one in Bulgaria and one in Romania. And Josh, our oldest son, was away at school. And on my birthday, I went to the mailbox and there were three letters. And I thought they were birthday cards until I took them in and opened the first one from Saren, our eldest, who was on Ayers on the Road last week with us. And I opened it and it was a leaf, not a card. Fell out on the desk, had a post-it note on it. I'll never forget the words, "Dear Dad, this is a Bulgarian leaf. The orphans I'm working with helped me celebrate your tradition. Don't forget, Dad, even though I'm far away, I'm still part of our family." Yeah. That's when I realized traditions are just what you said, Linda, the glue that holds our families together. The second one was also a leaf from Romania, from Shawnee. She hadn't talked to Saren. They'd just both done it. The third one, I didn't have too high hopes for because it's a son, and sons are a little less emotional, but it was also a leaf. Didn't have a note on it. It was just Josh.
Oh, he's a guy.
Yeah. I could just assume Josh sitting in his dorm saying, "I'll send Dad a leaf. He'll know exactly what it means."
Yeah, you did. It's so sweet. Well, we haven't really gotten to our topic yet today.
No, this might be our topic. We sometimes just put off topics.
Oh.
Right?
Oh.
Because this is so good. In fact, want to join me in the chorus? Ready? Traditions. Traditions.
You do it too well.
Come on, Linda. You were in Fiddler on the Roof.
I was the Fiddler. I was
you
the
were
Fiddler
the Fiddler on the Roof.
Up in Montpelier, Idaho, when they put on that production. Yep, traditions are really great.
Why do you think, I mean, what haven't we said? Why can families have too many traditions? Do we have too many? Have we met families that just sort of overdo it? Or is it just one of those things you can't have enough of?
Well, no, I think you can overdo it. And some of ours, we have to admit, have kind of petered out along the road. I think my tradition...
Yeah, the good ones kind of last.
My tradition was to have a picnic. But we were all in different places at different times. It didn't work as well. But I don't wonder. Oh, bowling. Bowling is another one.
Noah's tradition's bowling, and they do that pretty well.
And now we have two little twins that were born on my mother's birthday, who is the bowling champion of the world at age 83. And so
your mom was still bowling at age 83.
Yeah, and those little
twins. I used to be so impressed with that. It doesn't impress me that much anymore.
But those little twins just love their bowling tradition because of Grandma Hazel. So they are things that really last.
But you said it, Linda. We're moving into Halloween and Thanksgiving and Christmas. And my goodness, we have found some of the most remarkable traditions that families have. And a lot of them start out with just sort of a silly little idea and the family does it. And then, I mean, you know, we've run into families who something as simple as the way they decorate the Christmas tree or the way they hang the tinsel or what they do during the nativity reenactment.
You have a tinsel that really dates you.
Well, I just think it's so amazing that families are bound together by their holiday traditions. You ought to tell about the thing. We ought to take a little break and then you ought to tell about how our Thanksgiving tradition evolved, because that's another, it's not that our tradition is better than anyone else's, but it illustrates how traditions implant themselves and grow.
Right. Okay, we'll take a look.
That got to Linda. So we're going to take a little break. I've been talking too much this first half, so Linda's going to shift into high gear and talk about Thanksgiving traditions as soon as we come back on IRS on the Road.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to IRS on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back. I've recovered almost, and I'm choking on what you said, the last thing there. But we have had a lovely time with traditions.
So here you go with Thanksgiving. What do you think about that one?
Thanksgiving, we started when the kids were little. We bought some tape. What would you call it? Ticker tape? No.
Oh, those long rolls of paper, like cash register.
Used to be cash register things. You can still get those old rolls. Anyway, we had those rolls, and as soon as the cousins started coming in, the kids started writing what they were grateful for. Every single thing that they can think of that they were grateful for.
And they'd get competitive, and they'd want to see who could name more things than the other one, and we'd put them on this list. And it was a deliberate tradition, because we said to ourselves one time while the kids were small, what is our Thanksgiving tradition? And to be honest, the answer was eat way too much and watch football all day, okay. Which is okay. I mean, that is a tradition, but sort of everyone has that. And so I think it was you, honey, who said, it's Thanksgiving. Why don't we make a list of what we're thankful for? Sort of just a little thing. Let's just do it this once. Well, we got up to about 300 things, if I remember right.
Yeah, well, I don't know about the first time, but it was really funny because the cousins were all looking at everything they see, the doorknobs. I mean, what would we do without doorknobs?
Yeah, we're grateful for chairs. We're grateful for, and it just went on and on. But we said, okay, the rule is you have to really think about that thing. And are you really thankful for it? I mean, is it really something you're oh, yes, it is. So we'd write it on. And then the next year, I don't remember bringing it up again, but the kids say, hey, we got to make our list. Let's break our record. We had 300 last year. Let's see if we can get 400 this year. What's the last time we did it? I think it was 1,270 or something.
Oh, I don't know, but I know it was over 1,000. And then we actually, when we had a ceiling that we could reach, we had hung over the Thanksgiving table. I mean, there are just so many things you can do, but it does give them at least an instant to think, man, I'm grateful for my oven. I'm grateful for the beautiful leaves outside. Just everything you could see turned into something they were grateful for. And I think it was really good for us as well as for them.
Okay, now listen, this is a little bit diverse today. We've talked about embracing age, whether you're the one that's aging or whether you're the one that should be honoring those who are getting older. We've talked a little about family traditions, and we haven't even got to our three-letter lesson, but let's at least introduce it, and then we can go on with it a little next week if we need to. But as you know, we do these little three-letter lessons, and the one we have today I think is really intriguing because it's biblical, and it's alm, A-L-M, a word you never use today. It's usually used with an S, yeah. alms for the poor. And you want to read what that means, Linda?
Yeah, in the Bible, alms is a charitable donation of money, time, services, or resources to the poor. The word alms comes from ancient Greek and Latin words that mean mercy and pity. That's interesting. In the New Testament, the Greek word for alms originally meant mercy or kindness, but came to represent the charitable deeds that result from those feelings. The Bible emphasizes the importance of almsgiving, which is considered an outward sign of Christian love for others.
Isn't that beautiful?
It is beautiful.
And alms, a couple of places in the New Testament, alms evolves into an even more interesting word, alms deeds, altogether, A-L-M-S-D-E-E-D-S, alms deeds, indicating that an alms is not just a gift of money or some kind of mercy to the poor. It's a gift of deeds. It's a gift of doing something for others. It is another word for service, but it's a beautiful biblical word, alms deeds. And how many do we do each day? How many should we do each week? How conscious should we be of this whole idea of
alms? And probably many of you find yourself doing things like that every week, just little things for your children or family or your neighbors or somebody that needs some help. You probably do that, but I don't know that we ever really think about it. Is this my alms deed for today? I have really woken up in the morning and thinking,
what can I do?
What can I do to help somebody today? But you don't really think of that word. I think it's a good word.
Well, it's a new word because we talk about service so much. We talk about charity so much, and we know it's important and we try to do it. But sometimes just having a new word, alms deeds is so beautiful because it's what Jesus advocated most of the time in Scripture. The vast majority of the times that the word alms is used, it's used by Christ.
Right, right. And we couldn't find anything in the Old Testament.
No, that's right.
Alms, that's really right. Interesting.
It's really a Christian word. And, you know, I found another interesting thing, Linda. I looked up alm, A-L-M, without the S, thinking that it would just say the singular version of alms, you know, like you do a good alms deed, you do one thing or something. But it actually stands, what it means in the dictionary is asset and liability management, A-L-M. But I thought, oh, that's too bad. But then I thought, wait a minute, that's actually kind of cool. Asset and liability management. When you do alms, when you help people, when you turn yourself into a person that gives alms, you are actually managing your assets and liabilities. I have assets. This person has liabilities. I will manage this by giving something to them. You know, it's a balancing act. It's like I've been given a lot. I should give more to others. I should take some of my assets and remove them over to the liability side by giving them to someone else.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that because that's really what we're here for. That's what Thanksgiving's about. That's what Christmas is about, isn't it? I mean, it's just really almsgiving.
Yeah, I think that's going to be our theme for this holiday season, alms deeds, alms giving, because it's not just to the poor. It's we're all poor. We're all in need. We all need a compliment. We all need, you know, someone to smile at us. We all need,
you know, somebody's always in trouble. They always need help. And if we think about that as a not only a pleasure but a responsibility, I think that really is good.
So we're going to go a little further with that next time on Ira's on the Road, but I wanted to kind of circle back and finish with Linda's like, why are you on this tradition thing? I just can't get over it because we just went, as you know, so you listeners from last week, we went to Jackson Hole with our whole family. All nine of our kids made it to celebrate this big octogenarian birthday. And we used to have a place in Jackson. So the kids, it was 20 years ago. So, you know, the 40-year-old was in his teens. It's more than 20 years. But it was like memories. And I was thinking how many of those memories were really traditions, little traditions, like a place called Billy Burgers. That was their favorite hamburger that we had to go back to. And luckily, it was still there, but in a different location. Or like coming around the mountain in Star Valley and for the first time seeing the Tetons, and all was being ready on the tape deck in those days and on Spotify today to play Jupiter from the Planets. So that just as you see these Tetons, you're hearing ba 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 ba. Right?
Yeah, that was so fun. We had Tal with us. Our son who lives in Switzerland, he came all the way from Switzerland, and he was the one that said, we have got this, get this queued up because we always did this. And yeah, he was just with us. Everybody else was meeting. And so we kept going around the corners and saying, this is the corner.
This is going to be, we're going to see the Tetons now.
It'll be, And then finally we got to it. And it was just so fun to relive that tradition. And it is a beautiful piece of music. And that is a beautiful piece of nature too, the Tetons.
Wow. We went back to the place where we used to have our little spot in Jackson, and they and Josh, who always has access to every picture we've ever taken, found the picture of the three little boys, his three little brothers, who were just kids jumping on a certain spot right beneath the Tetons, and brought up that picture and showed it to us, and it brought back all these memories.
And then they immediately had those three boys stand in that same place, and we took the picture.
Yeah, as adults. So, yeah. So again, memories, traditions, just all these wonderful things that you can embrace in your family, and along with it, embrace age, because that's an important thing, and think about alms for the coming holiday season.
Yep. And we'll leave you with that. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Ayers on the Road. Bye-bye.